Welcome to the Faith Network Podcast, a podcast that's dedicated to healthy people, congregations, and communities. Now let's join our Faith Network team for today's episode.
Well, welcome to another edition of the Faith Network podcast with Dr. Kanisha Bryan-Moore. I am hosting along with her and I'm Bishop Fred Harris of the Lamb Foundation. Dr. Moore, welcome. It is another time and I'm excited about our guest on today.
That's right. We've been doing this series on faith over violence. And, you know, this has been very enlightening for me because we sometimes hear statistics or we watch the news, but to hear some of these stories that we've been hearing and some of the experiences has been really eye-opening for me.
Eye-opening, and oftentimes we hear about things, but it is, and I sit on this platform each Tuesday night, with Leadership and Faith, and this is where our special guest is, Coach Fitz Hill. Dr. Fitz Hill, we're so honored to have you. The conversation at hand is so relevant. We've got so much violence in our community, but we want to just take a moment to welcome you to the Faith Podcast.
Thank y'all for having Dr. Moore. Appreciate the opportunity to be here with you. Pastor Fred, always a pleasure to be in your presence.
Tell a little bit about, I know, man, you were a coach, St. Jose State out in California. You've assistant coach for the Arkansas Razorback. You serve as the president of Baptist College, and you're an outreach pastor for New Life, and man, you're doing so much. But you had something that actually changed your life that put coaching in the background and something else in the forefront. Kind of share and talk about that.
Yeah, on September 27, 2012, approximately 7:37 p.m., I received a call regarding, at the time I was president of Arkansas Baptist College, of Derek Olivier had been shot three times by somebody he didn't know. He was out there across from the campus of Martin Luther King Drive and helping a person he didn't know change a flat. And a young man, which was said were misguided, I profiled him for the investigator. I said he was probably a dropout, fatherless and unemployed. And I said, dropout will drop in someplace. And he took Derek's life. And the darkest, one of the darkest moments of my life was calling Miss Olivier, Mother Olivier, who's one of your avid listeners now. She's part of our family. I go to New Iberia two or three times a year. I stay in Derek's room, and to have to call her and tell her that her son was murdered. Which was not a bad kid, hadn't been in trouble. She gave him two choices. She said, Derek, you go to college, you go to the Army, but you can't just stay here. And we want you better for yourself. And so when I called her and told her that, she said, Dr. Hill, she said, I can't believe this. She said, I told my son he had two choices, to go to the Army or go to college. If he went to the Army, I'd expect him to be murdered. But I sent him to you, and he was killed. And she just started howling. And it has traumatized my life. And so that's the reason, understanding that homicide is the number one cause of death for black males aged 1 to 44. If you get a black boy to 40, black male to 45, he comes out of that, what I call the danger zone. He has a greater opportunity to become a grandparent. But until then, right now, there's no other ethnicity in the United States of America that homicide is the number one cause of death for black males aged 1 to 44. It's a crisis in epidemic proportion, and we never hear about black males being murdered unless there are a couple of categories. Number one, it's a black athlete, it's a black rapper, it's an interracial homicide or killed by the police. If we have violence within our community that takes place, which happens 30 a day on average, nobody ever discusses. So I'm glad that we have this platform today to bring awareness to this crisis.
Yeah, and that's exactly why we're here, because we have tough conversations, and it's just heartbreaking. You know, me being a parent, I couldn't imagine losing, you know, one of my kids in such a careless, you know, senseless act.
It's 30 of those a day.
Yes.
It's those
just
calls.
Too much. Mm-hmm. And I wonder, you know, these parents are, you know, heartbroken. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, what are we doing to support them?
Right.
What are we doing to prevent this in the first place?
Well, that's why, Dr. Moore, we created Mothers of Black Sons Standing Against Death, because there's really not anything. And that's when I look out and to see, particularly for this specific groups that's being murdered. We attended with Mother Yolanda Harrison, and 2 weeks ago. If you look at the opioids deal right now, there's so much going on for the deaths taking place for youth and young adults with opioids. But that's not the number one cause of death for black males aged 1 to 44. I was talking to a person in the health department not too long ago, and I said, oh, I see you got $10 million doing a research study for a teenage obesity, for childhood obesity. And I said, wow. I said, you know, that's not the number one cause of death for black kids. I say homicide is number one cause of death for black males aged 1 to 44. And because of that, and nothing's happened, it's the number two cause of death for black females aged 1 to 19, which is usually at the hand of a black male. So this is a crisis in epidemic proportion that nobody wants to talk about. And there's various reasons in those. That's why I said, hey, that's why I created First and 45, because if we can find those social determinants, Dr. Moore, that's leading to this crisis, and then we have a strategic plan to address this crisis, then we can come up with solutions. The government plan and state plan has been to build more prisons. And that's why our prison population since 1980 has grown from 250,000 beds to 2.5 million beds. That's their solution. And 60% of the inmates are men of color. So if we can address this crisis for this specific population, we can create empty beds. But you can't go to prison virtually. You have to go physically. And so that's the reason that we must come up with a specific plan, almost like the Civil Rights Movement when Dr. King led that movement because of how we were being treated. So now we must look at what are these social determinants within our own community that's leading to this health crisis that's no one's talking about.
Exactly. And obviously me being a researcher, and then working with other researchers that have common interests, you hit the nail right on the head when you talk about funding.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, and so I think that's one thing in the faith community we should be doing more of is speaking up about how our tax dollars are being spent. And so when we apply for grants through the National Institutes of Health, which is, you know, our government money.
Right.
It's up to the people we vote into office to make those decisions on how that money is dispersed.
I'm glad you brought that up. I submitted a plan that for NIH for this specific crisis based on the amount of money that's been spent in the state of Arkansas on black male gun violent victims, over $30 million that over the last 10 years that through a study and realizing that this is the crisis in our country. If a young black male gets to 45, the number one cause of death is heart disease. If he gets to 64, it's cancer. But I went to the National Violent Death Reporting Conference back in May in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, and I sit there and listen to the CDC, and this is not anything that surprised anybody. Homicide has been the number one cause of death for black males 15 to 44 since 1970. All right. So I look and I realize what's going on. But when the funding comes down, as you hit the nail on the head, that's not taking place for us to find how we can stop this. And I'm telling you, you know, one additions I did on the incarceration is because prison is big business. And right now it's tied into our economy. And now I'm going to speak hypothetically. If black boys and men quit going to prison, all right, our country might go into a recession. And I say that because right now Walmart is the largest employer of human capital in the United States at 2.3 million. Well, the prison system is only one larger, which is tied into the community. And so what we must understand is that we have to disrupt this system, which now how does that? We have to unravel that all the way down. As a former coach, if you lose, you can't keep running the same play. We're running the same play, and every day, when you get 30 deaths, and then knowing that on average, two and a half black boys will be charged for that death. 60% of those will be convicted, and they will plead a sentence of 40 years. Mm-hmm. So that's how the prison process has been growing because of the lengthy sentence. White collar crime is not getting 40 years. They're getting 5 and 10 years, do their time and come out. when you look at the growth, all you have to do is look at how the drug systems over the last 40 years have enhanced these sentences for our kids being involved. You riding in a car with somebody, they shoot somebody, you're charged, and you going to jail. We have to disrupt this in our community for our young men and get them involved in extracurricular activities, make sure they're graduating high school, all those factors that said, how can we stop it to have those measurables and those goals that we target for our young men?
Coach, let me put my pastor hat on for a second, because this is the Faith Network, and many pastors are part of this network and also just the faith community at large. And oftentimes we hear things and we talk about, you know, what makes it relevant for us? Well, you are connected and have been instrumental in launching, helping two other organizations to get started. We're going to talk about First and 45 in the next segment. But the SOS organization, which is Save Our Sons, and then MOBS, SAD, which is MOBS, Mothers
of Black Sons Standing Against Death.
Yes, MOBS Mothers SAD. Against Black Sons Death, Standing Against Death. Talk a little bit about that.
Yeah.
All right. These mothers who have lost their sons, yeah, and also the Save Our Sons, which is the whole key to, yeah, the grieving of these mothers. Talk, yep, about those organizations and the effect, right, that these deaths have had on these parents.
It's just really, when you look at the mothers, which we've had, and I'm really excited about Saturday, we're making our first presentation to the NAACP State Convention, that you must, Liz and Yolanda, and so I get to narrate that for them based on really their trauma, and giving them an opportunity to express their feelings and hoping they can help other mothers, because on average throughout the country, 30 Black mothers come into this club a day and they don't sign up for it. Mm-hmm. They're put in it. And that's not a discussion, you know, about it. So we've created MOBS as a support network, and we took it, Bishop and Dr. Moore, from the format of MAD, Mothers Against Drunk Driving. That's what happened. The young lady lost the child to a drunk driver. MAD now is one of the largest nonprofit agencies, got support all over the country because of bringing awareness to drunk driving. And I watched how that worked, because that started in 1980, and about 22,000 vehicular homicide had taken place in the 80s. After MAD, they have decreased homicides by 50% because of the awareness created by MAD. So I gave that to Yolanda and Liz. I said, this is our model right here that we have to advocate, and we have to triumph as Dr. King and our churches did to bring this crisis, you know, to the surface, which is what Dr. King did when he brought the crisis of lack of equality, lack of access to the forefront. And what happened? We as a community came together, and that's why we can ride where we want to ride today, do what we want to do, go, because our community came together. Faith, that Pastor Fred, that's what we're hoping MOBS will do within the Black community, and that's why. And what's so interesting, because of the interracial marriages, the reason we say mothers of Black sons, because what we find, there are several white mothers who have Black sons. And so it's an inclusive group that we want to speak to, and it grows every day. And so we did that as a frame of reference from MAD to say, what are we going to do? We're trying to save our sons now. Well, what is save our sons now? SOS. Mm-hmm. If you got a call sign out there for the ship that's in crisis, it's SOS. So now save our son. We can't wait any longer. I have a son. I have a son-in-law and two grandsons. Statistics tells me if they do not make it to 45 in the United States of America, they will be victims of gun violence. It says really may be safer for a person to go to Afghanistan and look for the Taliban than to live in Chicago for a Black person. So why is that? I'm a Desert Storm veteran. We can find Bin Laden in Afghanistan. We can get Saddam out of Kuwait, but we can't stop violence in America? Nah, I don't believe that. That's not true. It's that we do not have a specific strategic plan to do it because of the benefits. And one sociologist says, in America, if there's not a solution to a problem, find out who's benefit.
That's right. And we're going to talk about that more when we come back, because I want to learn more about First and 45. And then, you know, us being a part of the Faith Network, we're always like, okay, as a faith community, what should we be doing to make a difference? And so stay tuned, y'all. We have more coming up.
Welcome back to the Faith Network podcast. I'm Bishop Fred Harris, along with Dr. Kanisha Bryant-Moore, our special guests, Dr. Fitz Hill and Dr. Moore. This is a great conversation. The Faith Podcast, we are inspiring healthy people, congregations, and communities. And without question, we got to do something about this violence.
That's right. We've been, you know, in our series of Faith Over Violence, and again, it's a lot of this information is just heartbreaking and eye-opening in a lot of sense. And Coach Hill is going to talk a little bit more about First and 45. So yeah. What is that?
Well, as football coaches, I coached football for 20 years, and knowing how young men, as you see it, the youth programs, it's easy to get young men involved in extracurricular activities, sometimes more so than it is for academics. But I use it. I say it's the cheese to catch the rat, because if you don't have something for kids to do, maybe a swap PlayStation, Xbox, all that, it's interactive with our population. But understanding, as since I've been doing this research since Derek was murdered, I've become consumed by the numbers, and they said numbers don't lie. Together, they tell a story, and how we can take the numbers and come up with strategic planning to eradicate this epidemic within our community, and understanding that it is a homicide epidemic, and there's no other ethnicities that's facing this type of death within our community as the black males. And so, being a football coach, realizing you can keep the ball if you make a first down. You get first and 10, you make first down, you move the chains. The ultimate goal is to score a touchdown. I started thinking about that as a way to give these young men understand. When you say first down, I have broken this down into four categories, because for us now, for black males, if you make the 45, it's a touchdown, all right, because you're at the danger zone. Because if you just go look at it right now, even in, I think as recent as 2 weeks ago, I was looking at what nearly 40 homicides in Little Rock that we were facing. I think there were only four or five of those were over 45. So when you start looking at that, it's what I call the number, even more so from zero to 30, and then you start seeing how it creeps up. But it's what happens in the first and 10 of a young man's life that usually leads for the teenage violence in the second quarter of his life, which is 11 to 20. And so saying, how do we take this from, you know, the four factors that I look at to help address this in first and 45? It's the first is prevention, which we had mentioned early on. The second is early detection. Well, the reason early detection is so special to me is because I lost my father at 51 of cancer. I lost my oldest brother at 41 of cancer. Why? They had no early detection. So now what we're seeing is that these young people, when we do not assess their issues and give them early detection in elementary school and when they're in kindergarten and pre-K, then what we're doing in the first quarter of life, I call it pre-homicidal behavior, because when a young black male at 8 or 9 years old cannot sit down and follow instruction, it's coming from trauma from where his livelihood is taking place. So oftentimes we suspend our kid back to that environment. And so that kid now is left behind. He can't read. He's missing school. And he's back into the environment that caused the trauma for the suspension that what they gave the child. Mm-hmm. So I look at it from first and 10, the second quarter is 11 to 20, third quarter is from 21 to 30, the fourth quarter is from 31 to 44. If you get to 44, Turtle, he will be 45 coming up next birthday. The data says you're at the danger zone. There are some anomaly situations that take place. And so what I do, I said, I'm drawing up a game plan. That's what I'm working on. That's why you see the First and Five newsletter that comes out with these different topics, which we did homicide, incarceration. Then we did foster care. Well, foster care, 70% of inmates were in foster care. And then now rap music. So I start looking at all these different phases and how they intervene. And I classify those in prevention, early detection, rehabilitation, resuscitation during incarceration. So then I categorize all of these things in first and 45 with a specific game plan as a football coach, and said, this is how we keep our black boys alive. And here's a specific game plan to address each child Not a collective. Every child, if you are special ed, you have an IEP. You have an individual education plan. For these kids who've shown this greater probability of having trauma in their lives, we have to come up with an ILP, an individual life plan. So when that triggers, it's just like if I went to the doctor and I had a high PSA count, they're not going to suspend me. they're going to send me to the place so I can get treatment. We're suspending our kids with no treatment. And the next time we treat them is what I was in talking to a young man. He's 14 years old for attempted murder. He said, will you help me like you helped Turtle? Will you do that? I say, I have to see if you can be rehabilitated while you've been incarcerated. If you can, I'm going to do everything I can to help you. But why didn't we? And I said, you were suspended earlier. Yes, I was. That's when we invest in them in the first quarter. Because in the second quarter, we've messed up and say, now we're paying $80,000 a year for him. I couldn't get you to buy a helmet for him in the first quarter and for youth programs because you didn't want to be involved. But now you're taking care of him. Well, that's our prison system all the way here that now they're tied into our economy because you got 40 years if you're charged as an adult. That's what it is. And so First and 45 breaks it down for our community to say, how can we help this group? You, if you want to help young group, and then even to the mobs is helping the teenage pregnant. That's our goal, to be able to help the teenage, the pregnancy crisis oftentimes in our community in poverty, who does not have a support system that we can come up, identify that child, all right, support that mother, help that mother graduate high school, take that child and make sure that child has a support and nurturing that he or she needs, because the data says if not, it's going to be a negative cycle all the way down to violence and incarceration.
Okay. So that was a lot. And I know our listeners are like, okay, break that down for me, right, and how we can actually get involved. And we always, you know, I guess when we talk about different things, it can be overwhelming.
Absolutely.
And I think sometimes we use this like, okay, if everybody just do something, mm-hmm, we can make a difference.
Right.
And so if people want to get connected to you to work with First and 45, how would they do that? And what are some concrete things that they can do so they don't feel overwhelmed, right, but actually can be part of solving the problem?
Well, there is a plethora of things that they can do. And I think you don't have to oftentimes get outside your own network. Because if you have Sunday school, and then if you realize and you have a church in the community, the church, if you realize what the church was created for was to be the social hospital of the community. And so all you have to, and what we're doing, of course, you can go to firstand45.com and you can sign up, in which we have people to do that. That's for sure. You can go to firstand45.com and find out, hey, you can look on that. We want to help. Right now, we're doing this with the middle school. I started the 6th and Goal youth football program. That's why you see that little picture up there, which we do. We take these young people in the middle school, all right, which we start practice next week. We identify their crisis with my role model football coaches who we're identifying, we're pinpointing. And I've been to every school for the last 3 weeks talking to all the youth football and taking these young men and understanding that any kid who wants to be involved in an activity that what are you doing after school? Well, right now, they're doing nothing. All right. So to take these young people, put them in a tracking mechanism, we'll put them in smart data. The smart data piece will allow us to track these kids because they're part of Little Rock School District Athletic Foundation. Now I can identify, and then if the principal has some problems with other children they want to work with, we can do. So we have what we've identified as probably 125 to 130 kids that could possibly fall into the category. But I want to make one thing known to you all. I failed in the fact realizing that sixth grade is too late. All right. But this is where we started. So my data has pointed me back to elementary school, which in the spring I'm trying to start First and 10 because of all the young people who have been suspended. Now, to your point, the churches can get involved and say, we want to help that population. You know why? It's a very small percentage. Even though it's overwhelming, and I say that, only 2% of the population in America is responsible for 56% of the homicides. Now, I'm going to say that again for our listeners. 2%. All right. Black males make up 6.7% of the population in the United States of America. However, black males are responsible for 56% of the homicides. Fred and I don't kill, but we're in that 6.7% of the number. So how do you do it? You break it on down. It's Pareto principle. 80% of your problem comes from 20% of people. All right. This 2% that we're talking about can be identified in elementary school, can be identified in the community. And the summer programs, the churches, where they're feeding and what they're doing, I know that's what we do at the Dream Center. That's what we do at Ever Arkansan. That's why we have an opportunity. If you want to volunteer reading to kids, you want to volunteer being a part of our Dream Centers, you can do that. We take all the volunteers that we can get if you want to do that. And that's a church. That's a faith-based organization that works with all churches. Fred's a part of it for our CityServe network that we do. We identify families who are short of diapers or short of this. We support that. But what's the most important thing, Dr. Moore, is we must get them into network. But what happens because our kids are suspended? That's not no child left behind. We are suspending the kids who have the greatest needs, who need to be with us, and we send them away from us. And next time we see them, It's in the juvenile court center where they done robbed, killed, done something negative, and then now we support them.
Coach, on the sixth and goal, you were just talking about these kids, and on the average, these kids don't have a father in their life. What's the importance how fathers can get involved in sixth and goal, the men of these churches and what have you?
They're role models and coming right now because it's a volunteer base. You replace the fathers. You know, so you come out and listen. Your job may not allow you to coach every day and do that, but you can show up on Saturday mornings. You can come here. I had a guy call and say, hey, that kid needs some shoes. Let me buy him some shoes. You know, you can do those type of things. What we ask, that's not about football. And that's the thing. But here's what we found. We put 16 goal in one, and I'm not going to call the middle school out. They were having all kind of problems. Did not have one discipline referral doing football because I asked the coach to do three things. That's it. Practice twice a week after school. Eat lunch with them on campus one day a week. And that was the most transformative deal with the coach going to the school. That coach going there, and when they see that identified black male walking up in that school, they say, "Who is that? That's my coach. Hey, how you doing at work?" Everybody want and the kids who wasn't even playing. I'm gonna play now because why? That parent, he has come to that school, and the principal let them eat with him. He sit down. He gives them expectation. Hey, it's a faith base. Three things that Jesus did. He gave them love, food, and godly expectation. You can't give anybody expectation if you don't give them love. Hey, rules without relationships equal rebellion. You got to have a relationship with these kids. Then on Saturday morning from 9 to 12, we with those kids. I hadn't been to a football game on Saturday since we started this because I've been with these babies. And that's how you change your life, when by getting involved with these children rather than saying, well, I'm busy. Okay, we're paying for it. Now, if we're going to continue to pay $34,000 a year for incarceration, what happens over here if we put down $1,000 a year on education and then we take care of our crisis? And so there are many ways to get involved, and many churches have outreach programs and things to do. The thing about it is, when you see a problem, when you see a crisis, respond to it. You know, that's what Jesus did. He responded to the need of people. Don't say that's not my problem, because look. How do we allow for homicide in the United States of America, the richest country in the world, that we allow this to take place and there's no conversation? None. If we weren't talking about it, all right, and then sometimes when you talk about it, people get upset. You know what I mean? Well, you know, I say, well, you know, and think about this. If I look at right now of the stats, and I hadn't got the recent one for this week, but if I go back here and I look at the last one I had pulled up in that I had wrote down here, there is not one from in Little Rock. There has not been one Hispanic homicide. Now I just want y'all to let that register. All right, because when people start looking at me, not now, it may have changed since my data, but when I did that. When I was looking at it and understand what I was telling you as recent, during the time when we were at 33, and we're at 45 now, you had 7 black males under 20. You had 10 from 21 to 30. And you had 3 from 31 to 40. And you only had 4 over 45. I'm telling you, the numbers don't lie. And that's telling you what your problem is. So the intervention and the prevention is to address these social determinants. And what I found, there are about 44 social determinants that keep black boys from getting to 45.
Yeah. And this has been really eye-opening.
Yes.
And I appreciate you just sharing everything and your passion behind it. Because oftentimes, you know, we do need people like you with that passion to like, okay, y'all, this is what's going on.
Yeah.
And this is what we need to do about it.
Well, if anybody had to call Miss Olivier and understanding, that wasn't my son. And to go and sleep in his bed and his room hadn't been changed, that touched me. And she said, you sleep in Derek's room.
Mm-hmm.
And that was their son.
Mm-hmm.
And now here he is, 19 years old. He not a bad child, hadn't done anything wrong, but helping a stranger change a tire, and his life was taken. And when I talked to Papa Joe, he just starts crying. That was my boy. Well, I got a son in L.A. All right, listen, just because of the homicide tendencies in the United States of America, sometimes when you get calls at different times, knowing, was it the wrong place, South Central L.A., something, what's up?
Right.
You know, why? That's, we're living in America like a combat zone. And I've been to war, and it's not supposed to be that way. And it won't change unless we, as the leaders of our community, change it. The government's not going to change it. They're not going to. And really, the big government can't change local problems. We have to get in here and understand what's going on. And I'm going to say this as I know we're getting ready to wrap this up. This was not a problem in the 1950s and 60s. From 1865 to 1969, we did not kill each other. All right? So we have the solution to our own problems. That's how Black Wall Street was built. But see, now when we come in and look at all these factors that are taking place in our communities, within our states, within our nation, there's not an answer. We are the answer. And when people say somebody needs to do something, I challenge and say, you're who we've been waiting for.
That's right. And I want people to take on this challenge.
Mm-hmm.
So, Bishop, I don't know if you have any closing words for us as we are ending this fabulous episode.
Well, certainly, I'm thankful for Coach's passion because we're destroyed for the lack of knowledge. And he is bringing the data, you know, and he's placing it, you know, right at the forefront. Making it available. That's why persons need to connect. And we want to, before we get out of here, Coach, we want you to tell persons how they can connect with First and 45, because this information is.
First and 45 is a subscription-based monthly newsletter, and it costs $3.75 a month. You know what 375 times 12 is? 45. So if this information helps me continue, I say, if you sign up, I continue to speak up. It's a private-based individual that I'm doing because of the passion and love of saving our sons now, to get the information out there, because really most people don't know that homicide is the number one cause of death for black males age 1 to 44. So yes, you can go there. There'll be sign up. We'll continue to grow and evolve. There will be an annual publication that comes out, which follows up to these monthly newsletters that will continue. The first will be what to do for young boys 0 to 10 in order to keep them out of this. And this is all based on research that we're doing. Next month, this month of February, we're doing teenage violence and looking at social determinants we talked about today, that leads to our young people committing violent crimes between the ages of 11 and 19.
Okay. So please, y'all, get connected and learn and do something about it. So we are ending this episode. We look forward to you all connecting with us next time. And this is the Faith Network Podcast. We are all about healthy people, healthy congregations, and healthy communities.
Thank you for tuning in to the Faith Network Podcast, a podcast that's dedicated to healthy people, congregations, and communities. Be sure and follow the Faith Network Podcast on all podcast platforms.